Welcome to Boston Confidential, Beantown's true crime podcast. Boston is a great city, but there's more to it than the Freedom Trail and Fenway Park. There's a startling underbelly to the city, and Boston Confidential will take you on a guided tour of the hub of the universe, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Boston Confidential. My name's Barry McGuire, and I'm your host. I'm a 20-year private investigator on the streets of Boston, and I help run a company called Impact Due Diligence Investigations. If you need anything in terms of investigative services, feel free to contact me at Impact. If I can't help you personally, I'll certainly direct you to the right person or agency. All right, guys, let's get to it. Just some housekeeping stuff, as we usually do. We had a great episode last week, at least by the numbers anyway. It was an update on the Harmony Montgomery case out of Manchester, New Hampshire. Adam Montgomery has been convicted for second-degree homicide and a host of lesser charges, you know, improper disposal of a body. Harmony's body hasn't been recovered. You think this guy would ultimately say where his daughter is. He maintains his innocence, but his wife, yeah, she's still married to him, believe it or not, is in jail right now, Kayla Montgomery, and she's in some type of negotiation to get out. I don't know if that was contingent upon her testimony. I'm assuming it was part of a plea deal for her. She was doing like 18 months, I believe, and she's going to walk free. But this case, guys, has really stuck with me. Five-year-old Harmony. This guy punching her like a grown man in a bar fight. She was months away from being adopted by her foster family. Her biological mother was a horrible heroin addict. I hear she is sober now. Kayla Montgomery, the new wife there, was no better. And I believe she blew the whistle at some point. She didn't go to the police. Crystal Sorey, the biological mom, first alerted authorities to the fact that Harmony was missing. And I don't know how much she was heated at that time because she was a rampaging drug addict. So I don't know if the cops jumped on it or didn't because of her addiction. But eventually she kept at it and said, he won't let me see my daughter, and nobody else has seen her. There were other family members that usually saw Harmony and then didn't. So she blew the whistle, and Kayla Montgomery testified against them at trial, and I think she's going to get out of the joint as part of a plea. I got a ton of emails from you guys on this case. Thanks for reaching out and some good information. And it just came across my news feed from Fox 25 that the New Hampshire state legislature is trying to fast track a bill that if it became law, it would force Adam Montgomery to attend the sentencing hearing. He didn't attend much of this trial or any of the trial that found him convicted of second-degree homicide. And I don't understand the legal reasoning. There seems to be some game there. If you know, please email me at barry@bostonconfidential.net. I'd like an explanation as to what the strategy is for not attending your own trial. The authors of this bill believe it would be supremely disrespectful to Harmony Montgomery if Adam wasn't in the courtroom at sentencing, because relatives can give a victim impact statement. That's part of their rights. So I don't know. Hopefully it gets fast-tracked and Adam has to stand in front of the courtroom and hear what he did and what he actually took from people, because he's an animal. And the death penalty was made for people like Adam Montgomery. Shooting people in the head, stabbing them. He was the only suspect of a murder in Lynn, Massachusetts. I mean, what more can society take from this guy? Put this guy under the prison. And I know I savaged the Department of Children and Families, or whatever it's called here in Massachusetts, last week in the episode, And I did get an email or two on DCF. It's just a volume game. People tell me that there's so many Adam Montgomerys, there's so many Kayla Montgomerys that just exist on society's periphery, addicted to heroin. One day they're homeless, one day they're working. It's just chaos. And it just overwhelms the system. And I do get that, but this wasn't, you know, a typical emergency placement. This was Adam Montgomery, who, when Harmony was born, was in the joint for shooting someone in the head. And as I indicated last week, guys, in Massachusetts, your criminal record can't solely be used against you for custody of your own child. You have a constitutional right to raise your child, and the state has to offer a compelling interest, you know, in society's benefit to take the child from you, you know, safety of the child being the foremost. But you could literally get out of jail for murder. And if you can present a plan for how you're going to be a good parent, conceivably they could give you the child. Basically, that's what they had done to Adam. They didn't really review his criminal record because some of it was in Massachusetts, some of it was in New Hampshire, and it's just all kind of opaque. We can't use this. We know he did this, but he's got diapers at the house or some nonsensical reasoning. So that explanation for DCF doesn't really fly with me. This wasn't that type of situation. I know the numbers are high. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of Adam Montgomerys between Massachusetts and New Hampshire. And that's just a fact. But this particular case, Harmony's case, didn't have to go that way. She was months from being adopted by her foster family, who adored her. And when you see pictures of her with those glasses on, they were purchased by that foster family, and they were devastated when Harmony passed. They were so close, but DCF gave Adam Montgomery custody over them. You know, stable people. There were, I believe, two other foster kids in the house, but they were going to fully adopt her and make her part of the family. And I think one of her brothers. I mean, you know, some of these foster families, I know they can go south, but some of them are doing God's work here. And I think Harmony met the latter. They were doing God's work and the system got in the way. And look what happened. You know, guys, I've said it before. Harmony's death is the result of heroin abuse. We've legalized the most addictive substance in the world, heroin, and to a lesser extent, methamphetamine. But we don't fight the drug war. Look around. Is it any better? All right, guys. This next case, our case for this week, also centers around the Granite State. Actually, only about a, 15-minute drive from Manchester, New Hampshire, is the town of Derry, New Hampshire. And this week, guys, we're covering the story of Amanda Grzewski. And she went missing in March of 2020. Actually, on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. So in the early morning hours of March 17th. But this date is kind of weird because it's just a few years ago. But it feels like a lifetime because of what was going on. This was the zenith, or close to the zenith, of the COVID-19 pandemic. This is when everything shut down, almost in totality. The courts weren't in session. And quite frankly, I think that hampered the search for Amanda Grzewski. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing that last name. It appears to be in a Polish surname, and I do have some trouble with those. But Amanda went missing on St. Paddy's Day 2020 and hasn't been heard from since. Nothing. Into the ether. This case is a true mystery. a whodunit, if you will. And Derry, New Hampshire, let me tell you a little bit about Derry. When I tell you Derry, New Hampshire is a quintessential New England village, you're underestimating it on the Norman Rockwell scale by about 3 or 4. It's a beautiful town. A lot of people had escaped Boston from the 70s through the 90s to southern New Hampshire and then closer up towards Manchester. Derry is about a 15-minute drive southeast of Manchester, New Hampshire, and it's bordered by Londonderry, also a beautiful town. It is physically a beautiful area. Rivers, streams, like I said, Norman Rockwellville on steroids. But the town has been decimated with the opioid epidemic, and I'm sure it wasn't helped much by the COVID-19 epidemic that Amanda Grzewski walked into. And again, it's a beautiful town, and there is enough employment in that area where commuting isn't a real issue, but it's about a solid 50 minutes into the city of Boston. Again, probably 15 minutes from Manchester, but everything you really need is right there, shopping, entertainment. Again, same thing in New Hampshire as in like Boston South Shore. You don't have to drive into the city of Boston to have a great night out anymore. And Derry is full of great restaurants, nightlife, and all that. And on March 17th, 2020, that's where Amanda went missing from. She came back to an apartment with 3 or 4 others and left again in the early morning hours. And I guess I should tell you, Amanda Grzewski had a substantial substance abuse problem. She was addicted to opioids and had been suffering that for quite some time. As a young kid, she kind of got in with a fast crowd. And it's amazing to me, the drug scene in a place like Derry. Derry has really been harmed by the opioid crisis, and there's no end in sight, quite frankly. The whole area has been. I guess you could probably say the same thing for beautiful Londonderry next door. But we really need to do something as a country as it pertains to the opioid epidemic. And one of the main things would be to secure the border where this fentanyl and heroin come pouring over on an hourly basis. But we don't seem to have the national will to do that for some reason. Amanda actually grew up in nearby Nashua, New Hampshire. Nashua is a small city, I don't know, probably just under 100,000. I think it is the second largest city in New Hampshire next to Manchester. And that does have some city-level problems, but that's still a beautiful area. But Nashua has always had a pretty rough drug scene. And again, when this opiate epidemic started, every city and town contends with it. And I know I said Londonderry, Derry, and Nashua. It's true, you know, and if you go there, you'll see it. It contributes to every societal problem we have. Homelessness, crime. I don't have to tell you, you see it every day. So Amanda grew up in a big family. There were 6 kids, 3 boys, 3 girls. They lived in Nashua, New Hampshire, and it was a pretty stable home, mom and dad, a pretty nuclear family. The problem is, it would later come out that dad had some problems with alcohol, and that led to a divorce, which is said for Amanda was kind of like an earthquake. She never really recovered from not having her dad in the house. And at about age 13, he passed away. Dad passed away. And dad was the disciplinarian of the family, as it is in most households, I guess. And the combination of loss and losing the authority figure in the house, I think, sent Amanda into quite a spiral. It's believed she had started substance abuse around this time. age 13, which would be what, eighth, ninth grade. And she went to Nashua Public Schools with her siblings. And it took a while, but substance abuse caught up with her in high school. And she ended up dropping out of high school. And it's just a sad story. And you wonder if Dad was still in the picture, if that would have happened at all. They say Amanda at this time was a gregarious kid, always in a good mood, but was in love with partying. And the partying scene, I guess, for kids in Nashua at that time was outrageous. There was a lot of pills involved. And this would be right around the time when OxyContin would be tearing through the country. Everything usually starts with alcohol. If you ever listen to any of these participants of 12-step programs, they always say it's always beer. Beer is always the gateway. They used to say marijuana was the gateway drug, but it was actually alcohol. It always was. I think it always will be. And then marijuana, because it's just so much easier to get alcohol. That's simply the truth. But it said Amanda's descent went pretty quickly. And I kind of know people like this. When I was a kid growing up, two girls who were in a friend group, they just really never knew when to go home. And one is not with us anymore, and one is just coming into recovery after many years. And it was a hell of a shame, but you could kind of see it. Some people are just predisposed to alcohol abuse. And then when you just don't want the party to end, it's always something else. And I think that's what happened to Amanda. And she ended up quitting school shortly thereafter, I believe at around age 16. And it was kind of downhill from there. The family was involved. They were trying to get her help and all this. But if anybody has been involved in this, you know it's virtually impossible. You have basically an adult person, and they're going to find drugs if they want drugs. And Amanda did. And she was with this fast crowd. They were always a little bit older than Amanda and constantly up to no good. And when that's your friend group and you're predisposed to, say, alcohol abuse or OxyContins, it's kind of like a foregone conclusion. So, guys, I hate to say it's kind of a stereotypical tale of somebody who is addicted to opioids. It's just a spiral that gets worse. But you have to intertwine periods of sobriety where she would go to rehab. She'd go to a 90-day rehab. She went to a rehab that was out in California. For a short time, she'd always be looking to do the right thing. And when she was focused, it seemed to go well. But man, this stuff just calls to you. And it always brought her back. And it brought her back to the dark side of Nashua, New Hampshire. And pretty soon, she found out that she was pregnant. And I don't think the drugs ever stopped. She'd soon give birth to a beautiful baby girl by the name of Madeline. And it was during a period of downward spiral. And she'd end up having to give her parental rights up to a family member. She did have visitation. She'd see the baby anytime she wanted. But she was kind of just in and out of normal life. I think there's a lot of guilt and shame that goes along with these addictions. And when they're an active addiction, addicts simply don't want to be around good people and they disappear. And that was Amanda's habit, I'm sorry to say. I think Amanda was arrested in 2018 for a felony distribution or possession with intent to distribute charge for fentanyl. And it was reported that she had sold these drugs to a law enforcement official. It was rumored that Amanda at that point may have had to do something similar where she was involved with law enforcement. That's not concrete, but that's what some people have been saying during this case. And as bad as that stuff is that I just told you about, that was almost stereotypical for people with substance abuse, it gets worse because Amanda was said, I believe it started as an adult dancer, you know, at a strip club. And from there, it got worse where she'd have, you know, that personal contact with people. And she had advertisements out on the internet. And it was a horrible scene. At times, she'd stay at a hotel or a motel in Nashua. And people would, you know, see her there, I guess. And these are the times, I believe, when Amanda just simply disappeared from good people's lives. She didn't want to be around them if she was doing the wrong thing. And that would happen every so often. But the kid had really no way to support herself. She was a pretty girl. And I suppose, again, that's stereotypical, right? I also wanted to give a shout out to somebody who helped with this case. And that is Dan Bruno, who runs New Hampshire News on Twitter. Link with him if you can on that site. It's very informative. He does an excellent job. And he knows more about this case than anything I've seen in the mainstream media. And Dan, thank you very much for your help with this case. It's a tragic one, but it needs to be heard. So thanks again. All right, guys. So I think I've given you enough background of Amanda's struggle. And I guess we should just get to the day she disappeared or the night she disappeared. That was March 17th, 2020. Again, COVID was raging. People were just totally unsure of the virus and its effects and how bad this was going to be at the time. So right around this time, the whole world really goes into shutdown mode. But the hunt for drugs still goes on unabated. You know, if these people don't get heroin, they get sick, violently sick, and they say it's an awful withdrawal. So again, just some light criticism of the police. There doesn't seem to be an actual timeline of what happened here. The police response is that she goes missing from this home in Derry, a multifamily home in Derry, and that's the beginning. But it really isn't. These people were somewhere else beforehand. And I don't understand why you don't give a complete timeline of where people were beforehand. Because these people may have talked to somebody before this event took place, before Amanda goes missing. And again, it's just pretty bad. Most police departments need to get up to speed with public relations. And I get it. When she went missing, right, the first couple days, this is what addicts do. Addicts go missing. So does it ring the fire alarm as it would if it was a four-year-old kid at the end of the street? Probably not. But now we know there's something drastically wrong in this case. And there should be, you know, a repository for all the information that the police have made public, which is very little. It's just minuscule, really. So it's believed the night started at some point at the motel where Amanda was staying. And she was picked up by three individuals at a certain point, and they returned to 18 Birch Street. That was the apartment of a friend, a so-called friend of Amanda's by the name of Dan Moore. And there was Sandra Moore, who was there as well, and Michael Lynch. At various times and various reports, and none of it comes from the police, there were other individuals there as well. But this is kind of a murderer's row of drug addicts, quite frankly. And they all had lengthy criminal records. Dan Moore had been arrested for drugs, strangling a woman, domestic violence, and Michael Lynch is in prison for selling drugs to people, somebody who took the drugs and overdosed and died. So he's doing like a federal bid on that now. And it's all just similar, you know. This is how an addict's life goes. Arrest, prison, get out, do it again. Go to rehab. Go to prison, go to the hospital, go to rehab, the crimes that they commit, unless they're severe enough, really don't sideline them. They just don't care. They're so far into the life of addiction that it really doesn't matter to them. So this part of the story does come from police. At around 12:30 a.m., those three people, Dan Moore, Sandra Moore, Michael Lynch, go to bed at 12:30 a.m. Right off the bat, with all these partiers and drug abusers, alcoholics, they're going to tuck themselves in after having a hot cocoa at 12:30 because they got to get up the next morning, right? No, it doesn't go like that. So they say they go to bed and Amanda stays up. And sometime the next morning, they notice that Amanda had left without her clothing, without her cell phone. Boom, she's just gone. And if you ever know addicts, they're very particular about the stuff. They have to bring all their belongings with them wherever they go. I don't know if Amanda had checked out completely out of the hotel motel out of Nashua, but there she was at 18 Birch Street. And boom, sometime in that night, in that morning, she disappears. And this cavalcade of stars wakes up the next morning. And somehow they get into Amanda's phone and they see she had been talking to somebody. And the police would later confirm that she was talking to somebody who was using a burner phone. The conversation seemed to center around moving at some point to Salem, Massachusetts. And so this goes back and forth, but the police have not been able to identify the person she was talking to because it was, in fact, a burner phone. But the fact that she left her cell phone, Amanda left her cell phone, her clothing, makeup, and it just really doesn't ring true to me. I would have been interested to know if her winter coat was there because it was March. And, you know, if she took her coat with her, maybe she did in fact go out the door, go out for a smoke, who knows, right? But boom, you're there at 12:30 at night or in the morning, however you want to phrase it, and then gone without a trace, without your belongings. Yeah, I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. The police did report this group of so-called friends with Amanda tried to use her phone, you know, I guess to see who she was talking to, what was going on social media, but there was nothing. And one thing that was missing from Amanda Grzewski's belongings was a laptop that she cared for and took with her everywhere. And that was totally missing. And she left her purse, bag of clothes, cell phone, you know, hair products and all that. And boom, into the ether. The problem with this is the people she was with. Their whole life is a lie. Their whole life is drugs and crime, right? So it's been reported to me that the police hadn't looked at 18 Birch Street. That was the apartment of Dan Moore. How does this guy maintain an apartment? Beyond me. Rents aren't cheap in Derry, but I'm sure he's on some type of taxpayer-funded assistance. So even if you did do a forensic search of the apartment, right, you've got the fingerprints and DNA of all these drug addicts and violent people. They say they're there, you know. But of course, you could pick up some forensic elements that would say this was, in fact, a homicide. But I don't think that happened. The police, again, just way too silent on it. And I don't know if they're putting pressure on any of those people. I know that Michael Lynch is easy to find. He's in the joint. Dan Moore, I don't know about that cat. There's been a lot written online about him. Just not a nice guy. He's just on the crawl for heroin every day, any way he can get it. If he has to bash you over the head, strangle you, he'll do it. He's not a big guy, but you don't have to be that big to subdue a 5'5", 135-pound woman. And I'm not saying that's what happened, but I just find it strange that all these people tuck themselves in at 12:30 a.m. and she's going to stay up, what, doing a crossword puzzle? It doesn't work like that in that world. and everybody else wakes up safe and sound the next day. I'm not buying it. It's said that Michael Lynch and Sandra Moore were involved in a relationship. And one of the theories that has evolved was that Michael Lynch may have been caught with Amanda in an intimate act, and Sandra reacted violently. It's all speculation. It's all speculation because, again, when you talk to these people, all they do is lie. I don't think they could wave to the truth from the shoreline, you know? So that's one theory. The other theory that always comes in a missing persons case is they just take off because they want a new life. Drug addicts not going to lose her phone. They're just not. They're not going to leave their phone behind. That was her lifeline to make money. She was placing advertisements for prostitution. That's how she got drugs. And I just don't believe that you would leave your cell phone behind and all your clothing, right? You'd take that and leave. You might leave these losers that you're shacked up with for the night. I don't have a problem with that. And could she have been picked up by that guy she was talking to in Salem? There's no indication of that in the text messaging from what I've researched. It seems like kind of a fantasy. And that's a lot of times what addicts do. They just fantasize about a better life. And that individual was probably a previous customer, quite frankly, right? So there was a small delay in reporting Amanda missing. Those jamokes at the apartment with her used her phone to contact a friend of Amanda's who is known to Amanda's family now. And he checked online because she was very active on social media, didn't see anything. But something strange, Sandra Moore had reached out to this person asking if they had heard from Amanda through a private message, direct message on social media, and later deleted that using Amanda's phone, deleted the message. I just find that odd, very odd. And there was some delay in getting the police going on it, but once they did, they wanted a missing persons report from the family. The family did that as quickly as possible, but time did pass, and Amanda was known to the local police. They did look for her. They are working this case. I'm not saying she has a drug problem and they refuse to investigate. That's not what I'm saying at all. I think they're working hard on it. They have more information than we do, naturally. But deleting messages from Amanda's phone and all that, I just don't buy it. I don't buy that these heroin addicts decided to have a cup of cocoa at 12:30 a.m. and go to bed early because there was church in the morning. I don't buy it. Something happened. And she's in a dangerous demographic. She does sex work. She's an opioid addict. But that would have been on her phone. Hey, can we meet real quick? I want to see you. And maybe she goes out for a car date. That would be on the phone. Pick up some dope. That happens. That would be on the phone. It isn't. What happened? There's some strange post-incident behavior by Dan Moore, who supposedly loves methamphetamine. It's been reported to me that Dan Moore was seen going up and down the stairs of his apartment building where Amanda went missing on Birch Street, carrying stones from the cellar up to the living area, then back down on methamphetamine. That's odd behavior. I get it. He's on meth. What does it indicate? I don't know. I'm sure when the police heard that, they investigated the basement. I don't know to what extent. And it's time now. This happened in 2020. It's 2024. I believe Amanda would have been 26. Her birthday's in April, I believe. And I believe she turned 26 this season, you know. Time has passed. And I just don't want the police to fall into that cold case trap where they just don't say anything. You know, give a tidbit of something new. It generates interest in the case. It makes people talk. Maybe somebody who's on the periphery of this case can say, hey, maybe I can get out of this arrest by telling the truth about what happened to Amanda. All these people, the pressure could be put on them because they're just, I don't want to call them stone criminals, they're just addicts. One thing I didn't mention to you guys, there was a police report. This actually came from the police to the family, I believe. Somebody reported a woman's voice screaming for help during the early morning hours of the 17th in the area of Birch Street. From what I can gather, the police have checked security cameras. They've checked traffic cameras in the area. It's kind of a condensed area, a lot of people coming and going, but the traffic had really reduced because of COVID-19. It seems like a dead end for the cops at that point. But what could have happened to Amanda? The ever-present overdose theory is always there because she was a drug abuser. But there is a law in New Hampshire where if somebody overdoses and you call the police or the fire department, whomever, if you attempt to render care, you can't be arrested. You can't get into any trouble because you tried to do the right thing. So if she ODs and the cops come in and there's a half pound of heroin, they don't charge you with it. They abide by that because they want to save these people. So it could have been an overdose. Do these knuckleheads panic and do something stupid? I don't know. Was there a love triangle? And under the influence of these drugs, things go south and they take care of her and put her somewhere in the woods. Don't forget, this is New Hampshire, heavily wooded. Just get outside of Derry and its farms and everything else. There's a lot of places to stash a body. There's a theory that the local dumpsters, which are, you know, privately run, not run by the city, they all go to different dumps. So there's the homicide theory. I believe the theory of running away is complete nonsense because that's how she gets drugs, is through her phone. That's how she gets sex work, is through the phone. So in my humble estimation, those people who were with her at that apartment know more than what they're saying. They didn't wake up in the morning, right, from their slumber, you know, stretch it out while cooking bacon and eggs and see that Amanda's gone. No, it didn't go that way. You didn't go to bed at 12:30 because, oh, geez, we better get to bed. We have a big work day tomorrow. That doesn't happen with these people. The focus needs to be on these people, Michael Lynch, Dan Moore, Sandra Moore. There's a few people that were rumored to be there as well, and I can't confirm if they were, but these other people can. But again, they're just constant liars. Everything's a lie when you're on drugs, so did somehow these lunatics commit the perfect murder and it's covered up by their own lifestyle? It's a wild theory, right? But honestly, I think that's all I have for you. The police say this is an active investigation, and I believe it is. I think they want to find Amanda. She wasn't a bad person. She wasn't a stone criminal. She didn't hurt people, unlike those people she was with that night. You know what I mean? I believe she was a victim of foul play, and one of those people will eventually squawk because there'll be something that they want, you know? So hopefully that happens sometime soon. And one thing that factors into this is these people have a short lifespan. You got the two guys, I think, in the joint, but everybody else who's on the street, every time you shoot up, it's a near-death experience. That's how it's been explained to me. Every single time you shoot drugs, that's a near-death experience. And typically, they don't live long, so hopefully the police get a break soon. So I think that's all I have for you. I know there's not much here that focuses on the day she went missing, right? It's a real question mark. And I think the Derry police and maybe the New Hampshire State Police need to get in the 21st century, put something together on television, on social media, and get it out there and start rattling these people's cages, you know? Guys, say a prayer for Amanda. I think she'll hear you. Man, she didn't deserve this. And, you know, she had the ability to get clean and she wanted to. It's just so difficult. We have to change how we deal with this fentanyl crisis, this heroin crisis. It's killing 100,000 Americans a year. 100,000. So in 4 years, the 4 years since Amanda disappeared, we've lost 400,000 Americans to fentanyl and heroin abuse. It's unfathomable. It just really is. And it should be priority one, but it's not even close. All right, guys, I'm going to leave you there. I'm going to get on to the next one for you. If you need me, reach out at Barry@BostonConfidential.net. Otherwise, I'll see you on the flip side, you dig?